suddenly the world has gone crazy. We're pulling troops out of Syria, the Federal Reserve chairman might get fired, and the government is shut down. How do we make sense of it all over the holidays? We're going to talk about it in podcast 788, the Bob Davis Podcasts. And a light snow is falling in the present time frame, so I think it's a good time to cue the fire so we can have a nice fireside chat and calmly and warmly discuss all this crazy stuff. Yeah, there's a light snow, which is, makes it perfect for a fireside chat. And I got to remind you that last year at this time, my furnace went out. And so a little bit later on in the podcast, I'm going to tell you about Ryan Plumbing and Heating of St. Paul for home or business, because when you have problems, that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com, and I'll give you some more info later in the podcast. But I do have a question for you. A lot of people this time of the year get injured at work, or they get injured in some other way. And the question I have for you is, what you do when you are injured? Do you handle the insurance and workers' comp claims by yourself? Because let me tell you, it is a good idea to have somebody like John D. Scott of Hoffman, Hamer & Associates as a personal injury lawyer. John is a great personal injury lawyer. I'm going to give you his number so you can put it aside if you need it. 952-683-1351. Because accidents come without any warning, especially when we're having fun or working, because we're not thinking about a catastrophe. That's why they call them accidents. John, I network with John at least once a week, and it's funny because he tells these great stories that, you know, you would never think about. And one of the stories he told recently was that somebody was injured in a car accident on the way to work and thought, well, I'll never be able to get workman's comp or anything else. And John was like, well, you know, there might be something that we can do. And John is a very meticulous guy. He's very detailed, and this is exactly the kind of person you need to help get your life back after you have been injured, whatever it is. 952-683-1351. John D. Scott at Hoffman, Hamer & Associates, 952-683-1351, 952-683-1351. Or you can click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com, which takes you to jdsinjurylaw.com. There's a contact page there for you to share details of your problem with John D. Scott, personal injury attorney at Hoffman, Hamer & Associates. So sometimes when I come down here to the studio to do a podcast, it just flows and it's easy. And other times it is difficult because it's a complex and difficult thing. Now, I have notes here and I'm primarily concerned and want to talk about three or four different things. But I also want to ask some questions. So I want to talk about the quote-unquote pullout from Syria. I want to talk about the economic situation in this country. I want to talk about the situation with Republicans in the House and the Senate versus the president, maybe a little bit about the government shutdown. And I want to talk about what is now being referred to as Main Street conservatism versus moderate conservatism, and also foreign policy and economic policy. So you can see why it's hard, because it involves so many things. But all these things are coming to a head as we speak over the weekend heading into Christmas with the government shutdown, which really isn't shut down, and all of the other things. So the chief problem that I have doing this is that the general trend in media, I've talked about this many times, is for people like me to tell you what to think and to just, you know, pour out details into the air, all sorts of details which may or may not matter in 5 years or 3 months, about, you know, percentages of this and what happens here and what happens there, and ascribing motives to the president and to other public figures. And I don't know them. I don't know the president. I haven't spent any time with the president. I've never worked for the president. I don't know what he's thinking. And most of the commentators don't either. And many of the writers. So if it's someone that does know the president, they're writing to defend him. They're speaking to defend him and to convince you of a certain perspective. So there's a lot of that going on. in the media. It makes it very hard to understand what's going on. But I have two or three things that I think are very interesting about what is going on right now. And I think I'm going to lead with this one before we even need to get into this other stuff. There is now talk that President Trump is breaking with the Republican Party. And this is where we get into this talk of Main Street conservatism versus moderate conservatism. Many of you know who have listened to me for a long time that I personally feel that Republican moderates are the chief problem in the Republican Party. These are people who have been part of the party for a long time. They refer to themselves as the adults in the room. Many of them date back to the Bush administration and some of them back to the Reagan administration. They tend to be very moderate conservatives, meaning they are less libertarian and they are more statist and quote-unquote neoconservative than the Ron Paul people or even the populists that support the president. I'm sorry for the labels, but it's the best way to describe it, and I'll explain that populist thing in a minute. So last week, the president, President Trump, was having a conversation with, I believe he is, if not the prime minister, he's the president of Turkey, Erdogan, I believe is how you spell it. Turkey is a member of NATO. They are ostensibly an ally of the United States. And Turkey is positioned right there next to Syria. Turkey has a long and acrimonious history with the Kurds in Iraq as well as Syria. There are Syrian Kurds. There are Iraqi Kurds who have generally been allies of the West. So in Syria, if you don't already know, the equation is something along the lines of Iran and Russia supporting Assad, the United States fighting against ISIS with 2,000 troops in the region, and of course Assad and Russia are also fighting ISIS, which is kind of formed as part of the Syrian civil war, which has been going on now for about 4 or 5 years. And then on top of all that, you have Turks, you have the Turks and the Kurds, and you have Turkey, which is a NATO ally, and then you also have Iran, and you have Syria, and you have Russia. And the United States has had troops. A lot of people were surprised to learn that we had troops in Syria. So the president is on the phone with the prime minister of Turkey, who is concerned that the United States, which is working with the Syrian Kurds to defeat ISIS, is causing or could cause potentially a problem with the Kurds and the Turks. And asking the president about when he thinks that maybe he'll pull out. And apparently the conversation went something along the lines of, you know, isn't ISIS defeated? ISIS at one point controlled a huge part of western Iraq and eastern Syria. And now they are down to about 1% of the territory they once held, which is right in this little region, very close to the western Iraqi border. And the president looked up and asked John Bolton, who is the national security advisor, if ISIS had been defeated. Bolton apparently said, pretty much, yeah. And so the president says to the president of Turkey, okay, we'll pull out. We're going to pull our troops out. And everyone was completely surprised. This has created a firestorm of confusion, because the president immediately announced shortly after this call this week that we're going to pull out of Syria. There's 2,000 troops in Syria. He wants to get them out. And he said, we don't need to be the Middle East's policeman. He also wants to pull troops out of Iraq, and he wants to pull troops out of Afghanistan. And so there's that. And out of this, Defense Secretary Mattis resigned. The diplomatic official working with the anti-ISIS coalition resigned. Moderate members like Lindsey Graham and others in the House and Senate are furious with the president for this precipitous decision in which he didn't consult with anybody. He just did it. And so this is supposed to be this terrible thing that the president did, and it's wrong and everything else. I do not think that a pullout from Afghanistan or Syria or even Iraq is such a bad thing. And so I think that, you know, if there's some policy behind it, if there's some discussion with people, and if they work up to it, it's one thing. If it's done precipitously, it might involve, you know, some reaction by our allies feeling that they have had the rug pulled out from under them. You know, and the problem with discussing these issues is it gets so detailed that, you know, for a podcast, suddenly, you know, it's 45 minutes and it's boring as hell as far as I'm concerned. So I'm not going to go on any longer with that. On economics, The Federal Reserve has been raising rates. It's been causing problems in the market, supposedly, volatility. It's not completely wrong to say that rate increases may not be warranted given the economy being a little bit more anemic than what people think, and that they shouldn't be doing that. The president certainly thinks that, and I think the big story here is the president wants to fire the head of the Federal Reserve, the chair, which he may or may not be able to do. You can fire governors for cause. You cannot fire the chair because the chair is appointed by the Senate and the president. He's recommended by the Senate, recommended by the president, advice and consent by the Senate, and so there's a big controversy there. And then finally, there is this government shutdown because he's not getting the wall. And what I find fascinating is this is still a Republican majority in the House, and it will be until the middle of January. So you're talking about a Republican majority in the House that won't give him what he wants, and a Republican majority in the Senate that won't give him what he wants. And he seems to be directed, his ear seems to be directed towards Democrats. They're not the majority yet. And he's certainly not going to get a wall once the Democrats have a majority in the House. So here's a man who, for the last 2.5 years, has had a majority in both houses and will until the second week in January. And he's really only got 2 or 3 major legislative achievements. The tax cut bill, the Dodd-Frank refit, and an attempt to repeal Obamacare, which failed. That's pretty much the achievements. There's been no budget. We're doing continuing resolutions, which is why he wants the wall, because he doesn't want to go through a legislative thing with the wall. There's no plans for immigration policy to be passed. We don't have a budget. We are doing things on the come with these continuing resolutions. And I find it fascinating that this president can't get this done with Republicans in the majority. Maybe he will, and maybe he won't after the time you hear this podcast. But the gist of this is that people are now talking about a break between the president of the United States and the Republican Party. And this is the discussion about mainstream conservatism and moderate conservatism that drives me crazy, because the word conservative means nothing. Conservatism means nothing. There is no such thing as Main Street conservatism or moderate conservatism. There is Main Street populism or Republican populism, and there is moderate Republicans who may as well be conservative Democrats on a lot of key issues. And I think I've explained that in previous podcasts pretty well. So here's the gist of this podcast. I want to ask people about foreign policy and economic policy and immigration policy in the second half of this podcast, because I want to very quickly, and I don't want to go on too long, but I want people to begin to think about these things, and I'm going to talk about that in the second half of this podcast. Yeah, this time last year, unexpectedly, it was New Year's Eve. At the stroke of midnight, my heating went out. And I just had a weird feeling. Maybe there was a bad smell in the air, or something told me that there was going to be a problem with the heating system, and it went out. Here's the thing. Nobody bothered to check the heating system. They didn't check the filters. They didn't check the furnace I rent. Nobody had actually serviced the furnace in years. And so it finally just gave up the ghost on New Year's Eve. You still have a little time, and if you're concerned about your heating system or plumbing problems, when they go is when the weather gets cold and when the real pressure is put on these systems. So again, let me tell you about Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan customers get dibs on service. Ryan goes back 4 generations in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. Ask them about improving the efficiency of your heating systems for home or business if they come out to take a look at anything. Because when it comes to keeping all these systems running right, especially these days at home or your business, when you have plumbing or heating problems or any other kind of problem related to that stuff, you want reliable service. And that means Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul, 651-224-4771 in Minneapolis. Indianapolis, 612-927-6488. Four generations, Ryan goes back in Frogtown in St. Paul. Quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business, Ryan Plumbing and Heating. They are online at ryanplumbing.com. By the way, there's a lot of details that I'm not going to get into because I don't think that podcasts really are well served by doing that. If you want to find more details out about Syria, if you want to find out more details about economic policy, if you want to find out more details about immigration policies, that's your homework. And that is not my job to fill in the blanks. And I'm not going to spend hour after hour in these podcasts doing that. You know, the other thing is, if you can't figure out how to get objective information on this stuff and you feel that you need to go to some partisan website and get a point of view because the whole media is just, you know, lousy with these commentators telling people what they should think, that is your problem. You know, if you want to be willfully ignorant by refusing to get objective data, then you are being willfully ignorant. For instance, when it comes to Syria, I didn't say that it's right or wrong. I said, from my perspective, you know, he may not be wrong about wanting to withdraw the troops. It's a question of how it's being done. I think, and I hate to ascribe motives to this president, as I said, I think he's doing it to activate what's left of the Ron Paul people. I think often the president, President Trump, does things to activate constituencies because this is how he practices quote-unquote Republican populism or Main Street populism, which is I'm going to fight for your job, workers. I'm going to fight for you, farmers. I'm going to fight for you. You know, I don't think we should – you know, this is all stuff that is populist. And if you look into the history of populism – it deals with constituencies. The populist movement in the United States in the 1890s was focused on agriculture and farmers who had difficulties with Eastern banks, difficulties with getting their goods to market, difficulties getting a good price. And so their focus was the gold standard and other issues that made their lives miserable, but yet really helped the burgeoning Industrial Revolution. And so the Eastern interests, the industrial interests had a different idea than the quote-unquote populists. Today, populism activates these constituencies, and the problem is the constituencies don't say, I'm for this guy, whoever this guy is, because it's the best thing for the country. They want to advocate for a particular guy because he's going to fix the tariff situation, or he's going to make it possible for them to make to sell more corn to Canada. It's a very much a retail politics kind of thing. And I think it's dangerous because I think many times the things that populists do are not best for the economy and very bad for foreign policy as well. So I think the most significant story of the week is this talk that the president is breaking with the Republican Party over this conservatism, and what I mean by that is populist issues. And I think that the moderate core of the Republican Party is starting to break down. And not the least reason for that is that Donald Trump is a product of moderate Republicanism. The moderates were basically devolved from the time of the Bush presidency, both Bushes. The moderates have eventually devolved into a party of expediency. They've devolved into a party, you know, that is pretty much interested in continuing the status quo on foreign policy, which means troops and intervention and forward intervention and all these things. A quote unquote liberal foreign policy, which is, you know, they claim they're realists, but they're not. You know, sending troops overseas, and what separates them from Democrats is that they oppose abortion, generally speaking. They picked Trump to be the nominee, and they are the ones that railroaded Trump through the Republican National Convention in Cleveland in 2016. And so the moderates thought they could control this president, this man, Donald Trump, and they have failed miserably to control him. And now you are starting to see the party breaking apart because the moderates don't know what to do with. And the latest thing is the Syrian thing, where the moderates are firmly opposed to withdrawing troops from the Middle East. And they may be right. I think you'd have to really take a look at the alliances and the results of those alliances, and then really go through and study what happens once we pull out. You know, that's why people said once you get in there, it's going to be very hard to get out. So here's the key question. And this is for subscribers and listeners. Many times in the last 5 years, I have asked people to think about what kind of foreign policy the United States should have. Have you done that? Not in terms of what you want, but in terms of what is best for the future of the country. I don't think any Republicans thought about that. I think too much thinking and too much research hurts people's heads. I have been to a lot of these meetings, both on the road and locally, political meetings with Republicans or Tea Party people, and I have never heard them talking about foreign policy with any degree of in-depth knowledge of foreign policy. Certainly none at local political meetings, not very much on the campaign trail beyond rhetorical flourishes. What about economic policy? Have you thought about what kind of economic policy the United States should have? You know, should we go on a gold standard? Should we get rid of the Federal Reserve? What's involved with doing that? Should we encourage the Federal Reserve with only one mandate? They have something like 250 mandates currently, which are things that Congress asks them to do. Should we encourage the Federal Reserve to do just one thing, which is sound money? When we do something like a tax cut, should we cut the budget first and then do tax cuts? Should we be providing subsidies to farmers and other kinds of businesses like Elon Musk's car business or missile business, things of that nature? How big should the government be? How big of a part of the economy is the government? How is the economy actually doing? They just revised the third quarter down to 3.4%. There is some concern about the fourth quarter. There is some concern about the first quarter of next year. What about trade protection, tax cuts, the wall, isolationism, our relationship with China and Russia and so forth, which is both the economy as well as foreign policy? Do you think about those things? My experience has been, particularly with Republicans, they think about what benefits them, and that's all they care about. They want the wall. They want to get rid of Muslims. They want to get rid of Mexicans. They want to do this. They want to do that. They want to get their jobs back from China, that type of thing. There's no real – I'm just going to say there's a gross amount of ignorance. That doesn't mean they're stupid. It means they're ignorant of some of the details about all of these areas. You know, what about borrowing to cut taxes? Are you supposed to do that? As I said, what's conservative economics? How do you know? And I'm asking listeners, how do you know what's the right thing to do? Because I have a business and I know what works in my business. Okay, does that mean what everything that you do in your business should be done at the federal level? How do you know it would work? What about the Federal Reserve? Rates, bond markets, stock markets, asset allocation, real estate markets, and the impact of higher and lower interest rates on those markets? Is that working? What about cutting the budget? What happens if we cut the budget precipitously or cut the federal budget or shut the government down for 6 months? You know, the thing is, if you spend half an hour on Facebook, you're going to read a lot of 60-year-old children talking about Trump doing all these things and what he's going to do, and almost all of them don't seem to understand that. We have an incoming Democrat majority in the House, and very little is going to get done that the president wants to get done. So this is his chance. And yet we are dealing with continuing resolutions, not budgets. We are dealing with, very difficult problems related to immigration and immigration policy. Almost all of our border problems are policy-based because they haven't updated immigration policy. I have a podcast about immigration policy that I put up there recently that detailed the fact that we have addressed immigration issues in this country almost every 2 years since the formation of the republic, and we can't seem to do that anymore. And it can't just be because Democrats don't want to do this and Republicans don't want to do that, because you have had a Republican majority for almost 3 years in both houses, and somehow a Republican president could not get immigration policy passed. It's not good, you know, and I look at the shards of what's going on. Somehow keeping Mexicans, by the way, they're not Mexicans generally, they are Central Americans, so the Nicaraguans, you know, Venezuelans, who else am I trying to think about? Ecuador, you know, and Honduras and places like that is where these immigrants are coming from because of the situation in their countries, and we're going to keep them out. Somehow that has gotten translated, at least according to press accounts, into Hmong people who fought with us valiantly in Vietnam being sent back to Vietnam. There are some 8,000 undocumented Hmong, Lao Hmong, or Vietnamese Hmong in the United States, and apparently we're going to send them back. And these are people that fought with the United States and really were exemplary and hated communism and were strong with the United States, which is why we brought them to us, because they would have all been killed. Now it's okay for us to send them back. So our immigration policy is a mess, and we have a president with no legislative outreach. And really, when you stop and think about it, no national political movement behind him, and a bunch of Republican moderates in the House, no policy envelope for any of these ideas and areas, meaning there's no stratification of policy. And so Congress hasn't been able to act on this immigration question. And so what's happened here is that you have the president with executive orders, which is also questionable in terms of constitution. You know, libertarian people don't want the president to act with executive orders, Republican or Democrat, and this quote-unquote conservative president is going off the rails with these executive orders that appear to me to be designed to activate these little political groups that quote-unquote support him. And then I read things like, you know, well, this is Main Street conservatism. No, it's not. And as I said, it's Main Street populism. We are activating constituencies for political purposes. Farmers want this. Workers want that. Miners want something else. Sometimes they're mutually exclusive. Sometimes they're not. We all saw what happened with the tariffs last summer, with suddenly the farmers that supported Trump are pissed off at him. Rural voters that would have supported Trump are angry at him. Women, you know, abandoned Trump after they supposedly supported him and all this other nonsense. And I think we are seeing the beginning of the Republican Party disintegrating. We'll see if it actually happens. I think the moderates should be held responsible for giving us Trump. I don't think you can blame anybody else but Republican moderates. So Rence Priebus and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell thought they could put this guy in there and control him, and they have done nothing but try to control him ever since, and he has rightfully chafed against it. I think the president deserves the people that he wants to work with in his administration, and he's trying to do that. I'm not trying to defend who he's putting in or what he's putting in, but you can't have a cabinet and you can't have people that you appoint basically opposing you and not expect somebody to chaff and get upset. The problem is in the politics that produced the Donald Trump. Donald Trump is not necessarily the problem as much as he, to me, is a symptom of the bankruptcy of quote-unquote conservative politics, which doesn't exist in this country anymore. And I'm very concerned about the moderate Republican core in most states and in the nation. Essentially, this is a Republican Party that had a terrible loss in Congress, at least 40 seats, and they lost state houses in Minnesota. They lost 25 House seats in the House majority, as well as not winning a single statewide race, because it seems like all the Republicans have left is abortion and moderates who don't really want to rock the boat. So moderates support continuing resolutions. They're not cutting the budget. Moderates support troops overseas without really any resolution or goal structure to what they're trying to accomplish. Moderates seem to support a interventionist clash, a liberal foreign policy as opposed to a realist policy that's more U.S. focused. Do we want to be isolationist? What happens if we are? How does the Freedom Caucus, that is supposedly liberty-oriented, supposedly suddenly now rallying around a president who is not a moral guy, who doesn't practice quote-unquote liberty-oriented politics? This is a guy who wants to rule through executive order. And very quickly, I don't have a lot of time, and I don't want to take a lot of time. But one of the reasons we have a House and Senate and a Supreme Court is so when presidents do things, if they can get any degree of synergy going between both houses of the legislature and the White House, then they can pass bills that have been compounded with the people being able to vote on them. So the House and the Senate being directly elected by the people, what you end up with is, through the crucible of politics, you end up with something that is a little bit, has a little bit more gravitas, in the sense that here is an immigration bill. We all signed it. We're all now going to go forward and solve the problems that we are attempting to solve. And we're obviously going to create new problems, but we're going to try to solve the problems that we have through the application of this new law. They've passed like three bills. This is, you know, Paul Ryan claims that it's one of the most productive Congresses ever. I disagree. I think they passed a lot of little bills, but where's the budget? We're still on continuing resolutions. This is something the president wanted to solve. He didn't do anything to solve it. And you have a president that acts more and is more isolated and is acting more with executive orders. The thing about a king is, when a king makes a decision, then the benefits accrue to the king, and the problems and the negatives accrue to the people in general. And no one can say don't do that. When a president acts and it has been hashed over and there's been legislation enacted by the legislative branch and the president signs it, and maybe there are some challenges and the courts make some decisions about what's kosher and what isn't, what you end up with is policy that has been collectively agreed upon. We're not doing that anymore. That's dangerous. So you have precipitous withdrawals. You have this question of abandoning allies and what that does. You have this question of whether or not the president can pull all these levers on the economy, issue tariffs, void international agreements, and so forth and so on, without any results. And so the question is, will there be a crisis as a result of these things? The more of these levers that you pull and buttons that you push, the more chance that you will have a catastrophic event and a crisis as the result. And then there's this question of where our politics is going. You know, people are starting to write about the challenges of the future. We are nowhere near being able to solve the challenges of the future because we can't even solve the challenges of the past. And I think part of it is the politics. And I think I blame voters to a large degree because they don't want to do their homework. They don't want to know about issues. They don't want to discuss issues from two or three different points of view. They just want what somebody tells them that they want, or what they activate on from watching a TV show or listening to a radio show. And as one congressman put it recently, a moderate congressman, unfortunately, you have a tyranny of the talk show hosts who are not in office, that haven't been elected, that aren't policy wonks, that don't know necessarily from experience what they're talking about, running around and telling everybody what should be done. Yeah, you were a Secret Service agent. That doesn't mean you're a foreign policy expert. You know, yeah, you ran a campaign one time, but that doesn't mean that you're an economic expert. It doesn't mean that you've been enough part of the government or a senior senator or something and seen these things pass through. So we're not able to discuss this stuff openly and reasonably because everybody refuses to look at any kind of objective fact, and they've forgotten how to find objective fact. I've talked about it a lot in these podcasts. A government shutdown doesn't bother me at all. But it should be, people should know, first of all, the whole government doesn't shut down. And secondly, a lot of the economic growth in the last, a fair amount of the economic growth, and they're finally starting to do analysis of it, a fair amount of the economic growth in the last three quarters has been government spending. People don't realize that. When that goes away because you shut the government down, what's going to happen to the economy? So that's kind of my fireside, last-minute view on a lot of this stuff. I think we're watching the disintegration of both political parties, and I think we're watching the emergence of a much more populist policy, populist politics on both ends of the scale. And the things that populists, Democrat and Republican, advocate are almost never good policy. So I think subscribers and listeners and Republicans and Democrats really need to take a step back this holiday season and say, why don't we do a little research? Why don't we, instead of talking about this, instead of litigating this, why don't we take back and try to figure out what we know and where we need to find out and what new information we need to find out to get a better view of this? Because we have a lot of challenges coming forward. We have the challenges of artificial intelligence. We have the challenges of a rising China. Or what happens if China collapses? We have the issue with Russia. We have what's going on in the Middle East. And if we pull troops out, what's going to happen? We have issues with how we treat our allies. We have trade issues. We have new technology issues, from robots on the farm to drones shutting down airports. There's a lot of stuff going on that is going to need people who are going to be able to address it. And it starts with the people. It starts with the voters. Well, aside from the many other things that are going on in this country that are revolutionary, there is also a payment revolution going on in the United States. More and more companies want to pay electronically. And so they are asking small businesses if they can pay electronically. And so your customers need a secure, they need a solid payment processor. I'm working with a company called ReliaFund, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. They're at ReliaFund.com. If you have a business, if you are a developer and you are working on developing software for clients for back office stuff as well as e-commerce, then listen up, because ReliaFund can work with developers and small business people to create custom solutions. They are a payment processor. They've been doing this, providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for more than two decades, and they are great. No long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. If you're a developer or a small business and you call these guys, they can take care of you. And you're going to talk to Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry personally. And that's what I love about these guys. I found them online, contacted them through a contact page, which is a link on my website, and Kevin Hill got right back to me. So it was great. And I have a ReliaFund button at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can call 866-243-5040. That's 866-243-5040. Or check them out online at ReliaFund.com, R-E-L-I-A-F-U-N-D. They are part of the payment processing revolution in this country. And by the way, they just want to wish you a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, Happy Holiday Season. They are great guys at ReliaFund. And thank you guys for sponsoring the Bob Davis Podcasts. Okay, thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, the granddaddy iTunes, and TuneIn. These are places you can subscribe to the podcast. I'd recommend subscribing at iTunes. Stitcher, there's some issues with Stitcher recently, and I got on Spotify. It works flawlessly. Google Play Music works flawlessly, and updates whenever I update a podcast, those services update immediately. We're also at blogtalkradio.com, Spreaker.com, which is a great platform these days. Right off the page at the Bob Davis Podcasts, at thebobdavispodcast.com. You can listen to individual podcasts. You can listen to the stream. I do appreciate likes and shares and favoriting and following on Facebook and Twitter. Ken Madden, for sure, and Mandy Benz, thanks for sharing my podcast so much lately. It really helps. And I appreciate your donations for Mobile Podcast Command, which will be sallying forth soon, and I'll give you some details on that. Somebody sent me $40, and I can't remember who. But I'm going to thank all of you guys by name before the end of the year. So I am not going to forget to do that. And again, thanks for your donations at thebobdavispodcast.com.
One pill makes you larger, and one pill makes you small. And the ones that mother gives you. When she's 10 feet tall.
chasing rabbits, and you know you're going to fall. Tell 'em a hookah, smoking caterpillar, has given.